Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. Today is April 20th, 2022, and I'm waiting for a guest to call in, and she just did. I'm thrilled about that, okay? Thank you so much. All right, let me just get this music off here for a second. Okay, Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, I'm Larry Jacobs, and we've got Jenny Torres, the former Jenny Torres, who is the Senior Vice President of Curriculum and Instruction over at Waterford.org. I say the former Jenny Torres because now she's officially Dr. Jenny Torres. And Dr. Torres will be talking to us about all the wonderful things that can happen when you incorporate family voice in education. And we'll talk about her new doctorate and all the wonderful things they do over at Waterford.org. Hold on one second. Just had to clear my throat. Okay, we're going to archive this show over at ace-ed.org. That's our consortium for equity in education. ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. We're doing a lot of work these days because we're very concerned about teacher retention and the educator shortage. All right, teacher recruitment, that sort of thing. So please go over there, see what we're doing. We have a little icon on the web, on the menu for that, all about teacher retention. And we're also doing a lot of work in social-emotional learning, which I know is important to Waterford and most of the companies out there these days. It's extremely important. It's a top priority of literally every school district, so says all the funding requests that go out there. So we're going to talk to Dr. Torres all about that. Please, we invite you to look at our magazine, Equity and Access. It's our online journal, podcasts are archived over there at ace-ed.org. And now, ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce Dr. Jenny Torres. Hello, Jenny. It's Larry.
Hi, Larry. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, Dr. Torres. How's that feel?
Getting used to it. It kind of feels strange still, but I'm definitely honored to be called Dr. Torres and excited that I was able to do that work.
That's great. Where'd you get your doctorate? What school?
At American University.
In Washington, good old Washington, D.C., huh? Did you go online,
yeah,
or were you there live and in color?
I was doing, it was kind of a hybrid program. Most of it was online, but we did come together for some residencies and classes as well.
Cool. That is just great, Jenny. How long did it take to get your degree? I'm just curious. It's great.
Yeah, about 3 years it took.
Wow.
Nonstop. So the program is designed for folks who are in the world of education, working and earning their doctorate degree. So the classes are in the evenings and things on the weekends, and then you don't stop for the summers or any time. You just keep going. So it was great.
It is great. And I'm just curious, you're senior VP over at Waterford.org of Curriculum and Instruction. And of your, if I may, your classmates, okay, in that cohort, how many of them were actually involved in K-12 education? Or how many of them were, like you, in the industry side of it? Did you ever get a feel for that?
Sure. Almost all of the rest of them were involved in pre-K-12. And I had one or two other teammates who did things outside of the school building every day. But most of the folks were in the school buildings and working directly in either administration, teaching, or curriculum and design. It was great.
It has a specific
focus on anti-racism and equity, which also is one of the first schools of education in the nation to build that specific focus. And American University has been really dedicated for that, to that. And they're building a lot of really amazing resources. And now they have 7 cohorts of students going through that program. So it's pretty amazing.
Wow, that is fantastic. And from what I understand, from what you said, the great many of those people are going to remain working with school districts, which you do all the time, but you do it through the industry. I love that. Okay, but most people are going to be working within the school districts or still stay in the classroom, right? It's cool. It's great.
Absolutely.
It's
in fact, American also has a program with the D.C. public schools, and they work directly with teachers and principals from the schools, too. So it's quite an amazing program, and absolutely, it's going to really impact not just the local D.C. area, but all over.
And we can talk about Waterford, but a lot of people know about Waterford, but I'm interested how your doctorate works into what you do. We're going to talk about the Waterford Family Academy. It's something called the Waterford, C-A-R-E-S, the Waterford Cares rubric, okay? But you must have an interest, okay? And actually, what is the title of your, if I may, the title of your dissertation? Just because I can see how the two things are working together.
Sure, absolutely. So the title of my dissertation was about designing with families in a national nonprofit focused on literacy. And the dissertation had a specific focus on learning how to better serve bilingual learners and their families.
Ooh. So when we're talking today about incorporating family voice in education, we're really, if I heard you correctly, you're talking about the equity involvement of people who maybe are underserved, have language difficulties, et cetera, and incorporating that voice into public education. Am I correct on that?
You are 100% correct, Larry.
So what'd you learn? What doing wrong, and what do we need to do that's right? There you go.
So I know
you just defended your dissertation, Dr. Torres. Please continue. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. What we learned is that, one, family voice is drastically missing from a lot of the discussions in the world of education. Secondly, bilingual families and learners are absolutely underrepresented when it comes to conversations about education, curriculum, and the learning that their children are doing every day in the schools. And we need to think of ways to co-create solutions with families rather than designing solutions for families.
Wow.
Some big takeaways. And then the other takeaway is we have to do this in teams of educators and learners, and the learning has to be done with the educators themselves in co-creation with the families, because those of us who are in education also have some unlearning and learning to do about our own biases and assumptions about families.
Of course. Of course. So my question then, and this is a serious question, education, okay, in basically every school district, I hate to say this, but it's true, is somewhat of a bureaucracy, all right? And it's hard to get a bureaucracy to move, okay? It's hard. If you don't believe me, ask Franz Kafka, okay? And it is hard, okay? And I'm curious, and I agree everything you're saying and geez, I hope it all happens. How do we make it happen? Where's the beginning of it, Jen? How do we start?
Well, I agree with you that it is very, very hard. And the purpose of my dissertation at Waterford was to start within first and foremost. So building trust within the organization and a clear shared understanding of the importance of this equity work. So the idea was really to have teammates from Waterford come together. So the intervention, you know, as an EDD student rather than a PhD student, I had to develop something, you know, I had to implement it and I had to test whether it worked. And I did that within the organization of Waterford. And we brought folks together and we had them look at family feedback. And we said, okay, so I created sort of a workshop system where we took all of this feedback from families. So an interview of a Spanish-speaking mom, some family feedback from English and Spanish-speaking families, and we parsed it apart, and everybody found themes. And the themes we came up with, we then used the family words to create a rubric. We're now going back with families. We've done one iteration of validation with families to say, did we get this right? And we're going to keep doing that to say, hey, did we get this rubric, this set of guidelines that we want to place upon ourselves based on what families want? Right, and that's where the Waterford CARES acronym comes from, because the five themes that we found when we looked at all of the things families told us were that they needed communication, academic content, relationships, expectations, and support. Those were the five categories that they had for us. And so we're now going back to say with families, and we're hoping this summer to do some workshops with this within our family academy, saying, hey, we need to validate and understand, did we get this right? But while we did that, we were able to lead our own teammates through conversations about how do we talk about whether we succeed or fail and own it ourselves rather than placing the blame on the families. How do we change our vocabulary to say the system's not working? It's not that the families don't care, because every family cares about their child. It's that the system isn't supporting them in the way that they need it to support them. We're doing something that we could improve upon. The families are doing everything that they need to be doing. And so, you know, I think it's really a shift in putting the ownership of problems on the system rather than the families or the students.
And you're doing, and I want you to explain what the Waterford Family Academy is, because I want to just go through this for everybody. Waterford.org, Waterford, I want to say this properly, produces curriculum materials, okay, specifically pre-K2, okay, and they do other stuff as well. They are magnificent at that, okay, and they make those products available in many different forms all over the country. But Waterford was also the Waterford Institute, if I may, and put their money where their mouth is, so to speak, okay, and created schools that make sense, okay, using their methods. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, Jen, okay? And now what I know is the Waterford Institute. Suddenly you're talking about the Waterford Family Academy. What are the two things that just help me if I said something wrong and all that? And by the way, I love your company.
Yeah, no worries. So our organization, so we were the Waterford Institute for a long time,
right,
and really, you know, built a lot of curriculum and research and did wonderful work. And we've been around now for about 40 years. In recent times, we've shifted to be Waterford.org to ensure that we highlight the nonprofit status of the organization. And we do absolutely, at the heart of our mission is educational equity. And we believe that working with families is, and the youngest learners is really one of the best ways that we can make long-term impact. So we do that directly to families and also with schools to families. So we have curriculum that children use and curriculum and ideas that we share with families as well, and families have personal coaching. We also have Waterford Family Academy, which is where we bring together cohorts of families. And right now this usually does happen in partnership with a school or a Head Start center, where that those educators say, hey, we have a group of families we'd love to have come together for a series of sessions where they learn about, for example, the science of reading. And they might learn together about some best ways to practice and do some activities that, you know, to extend learning into the home. But it's also a place to build community between families and community with the school district. So teachers and family members all coming together to all learn together and to support the children. And we offer this right now in English and in Spanish. And we've had some wonderful success stories, and it's just been a ton of fun. Because
I'm just curious, if I may, where you just give us a couple of places where you're doing this, just so people understand. You guys are in Utah,
sure,
obviously, certainly in Utah. Where else?
Yep. But we've had Family Academy in Maryland and in Florida. We've had Family Academy in Ohio. And I know that they have several other locations that are, like I mentioned, going to start this summer. I don't have those memorized, Larry, but I know, you know, Maryland, Ohio, Florida are places that are on the top of my head, I remember. But it's been in several places all across the nation.
It seems like every time I talk to Ben, your boss, Ben Houston, it seems he's always driving up to Idaho or the Dakotas. I wouldn't be surprised if Idaho and the Dakotas are somehow involved in this, too. Okay?
Oh,
I thought
absolutely.
You were
going to
say
we do a lot in rural areas, for sure.
Yeah.
And the beauty about Family Academy, too, and mentioning rural, is that we've been able to do this virtually. So all throughout COVID, we had some Family Academy sessions that ran so that families felt connected to each other.
And, you know, Jen, I have to tell you something funny. I taught many, many years ago outside of Philadelphia, and then I got into other things, and I went back into teaching and all that. And in the years in between, okay, I went into one faculty room, you know, for years and years and years, and years and years passed, and I went into another one. And the teachers, this is just cracked me up the way you said it. The teachers were saying the same thing in that faculty room that they were saying 1,000 miles away 5 years, 10 years earlier, that the community doesn't really care about education. And, of course, the point is every community cares about education, all right? And I love what you're doing. You have to listen to the community, okay, and have the schools reflect what the community needs. Teachers really care, okay, and they really want what they do to work. All right, but you have to listen to the community. You can't say, oh, the community doesn't care about education. Wrong. They do care about education. And we got to make sure, this is what you're doing, that what we're doing fits in to research that actually makes it work for that community. And I just love what you said. It just struck me when you said it. Okay, we got to get the families involved and understand their needs. CARES, that acronym is so incredible. That's my speech for today, Jen.
100%. Go, Larry.
Yeah. You know, you just have to understand the community. For so long, we've always been trying, you know, we're taught how to teach and all that, and we expect this, but you got to make sure that if the kids aren't learning, you're not teaching. If the community isn't learning, you're not teaching. You could pretend you are, but it's learning that matters, not teaching. Okay? And
once, yes.
You know, it's that simple. Okay? And I just love what you're doing, and we have to have the research behind it, et cetera. And let me ask you this. You work at a company, Waterford, okay, waterford.org, all right? So when you're VP of Curriculum and Instruction, so you know all this. How do you take what you learn from all this and start to incorporate it, in, if I may, into your products, which you obviously
sure.
do, all about equity and et cetera? Go ahead.
Right. Well, we have.
How do you do that?
Everybody has is on this cycle of continuous learning, right? So we certainly don't want to in any way assume that we're perfect or have everything right. We're learning, and every time we go into a new community, we need to listen. We need to listen and hear what they really expect from us and need for with their family members in that community and the educators also in that community. So one part of this is really listening and getting a lot of feedback on what we already have developed. Another part is our continual promise to always ensure that we are measuring whether we're having success with the youngest learners in terms of literacy skills and doing
yep.
that in a way that we ensure that we're serving all learners. So not just looking at averages, but really dividing up and say, are we serving,
yep.
you know, all genders in the same way, ages in the same way, language,
wow.
you know, from families who speak different languages. We've translated all of our books into Spanish, and we now have a wonderful bilingual library with extra supports for Spanish-speaking families. We have, we're in the process of investigating to understand what are some other languages that we also need to be serving. And
sure.
we are also really thinking about how do we do any, you know, we're an English language development program for youngest learners, and we have math and science as well. And one of the areas is as our growing number of Spanish speakers, for example, in this country, how do we make sure that we can provide an English language development opportunity as well, but not in a way that it in any way places the expectation that English is better than Spanish, but rather says all languages.
Oh, that's interesting.
And how
do
we make sure that every child has the opportunity to be bilingual, as an example? How do we make sure that?
That I would love. I would
right.
love every kid in America to go through school and wind up bilingual at the end. Oh, boy, but I
Me
love
too.
That. I don't know why that never
There's
happened.
There's so many benefits from that. Right. There's
right.
so many benefits from that. And frankly, the reason it didn't happen, if we look back, was about control and power and equity
of
issues,
course.
Too. So
that's why, yeah, that's why,
yeah,
that's why everything doesn't happen. Those things. That's why everything
right,
doesn't
right.
happen. Those exact things. Okay. It's
yep.
amazing. You know, I was talking about that the other day with somebody, and it was saying, you know, I didn't start when I went to school 47 billion years ago, but they didn't start teaching me a second language. I went to school in Philadelphia, and Spanish until ninth grade, all right? And that's when you picked up the extra course, okay, in language. And you could pick either Spanish or French. And it dawned on me, people learn language at a very early stage in their life. It's much easier to learn language the younger you are. I'm no expert
Correct.
On this, but I was able to figure that. Yet they waited until I was 15. Before they started
right.
teaching me a second language. I mean, and let me, I'm going to pose the question, what kind of morons were they? Anybody could figure that out. Okay, it just
well,
doesn't even make
right.
sense. Yeah, it drives me
it
nuts.
It doesn't make any
yeah.
sense at all. It doesn't. You're right. Brain science tells us that between the ages of zero and eight, our brain is really primed for learning language. And that's why it's so important that we develop strong literacy skills and develop those skills and the vocabulary and understanding in as many languages as possible. And we in this country have a beautifully, like this wonderful, beautiful treasure that we have all of these families who speak amazing,
yep.
wonderful
Breathe.
Languages. So it's, you know, we can offer them English language instruction as well through something like Waterford, and they can continue speaking every other language that's beautiful and wonderful in their homes as well. And we need to support all of that. And our country would be better in the end if we could figure out how to do this for everyone.
Well, it's about time we did figure it out. And you have a passion. I'm picking this up, and you mentioned it earlier, about dual language, bilingual, that sort of thing. And were you brought up in a did your family speak English or Spanish or what? Well, you have a passion for this.
Yeah, well, my mom was a Spanish teacher for 30 years.
Yeah.
So
wow.
We didn't speak Spanish in my home. My mom made absolutely certain that we started learning languages in elementary school, my sister and
That's
I.
That's pretty cool.
And then, yeah.
That's pretty
so
cool.
Then I went on to really love languages in general and words and all of that. And so I also appreciated that in Spanish. And I have my undergraduate degree in Spanish. But before I went to college, I fell in love with my husband, who's from Colombia. And so my in-laws now, you know, they assured that we spoke only Spanish in their home. And now we've lived in Puerto Rico. We lived in Colombia. And being bilingual has opened doors for myself.
Oh,
I know for my husband. And all three of my children are bilingual. And so they have different varying degrees of language comprehension and abilities as anyone would. But we felt very strongly that they needed to have that that dual language experience, that dual cultural experience, and be able to really use that moving forward in the world. And already I've seen how it's made a great difference for my children, too.
It's unbelievable. And we have good friends from Medellin. Okay.
Yeah.
Go back and forth.
Beautiful place.
Oh, it is. There's a big article, by the way, in the New York Times today about Colombia and politics. Okay, on the front page. If you feel like reading it, since it matters,
absolutely.
Yeah, you might actually enjoy that. That's really cool. By the way, tell your mother, and I always die laughing at this. Okay, I really was not a good student of Spanish. All right, and I still remember not paying attention. I still remember this. So many years later, not paying attention, thinking it was completely unimportant when my Spanish teacher in ninth grade started to talk about conjugation, which is the whole basis of the language. Okay? And I paid no attention to that whatsoever. And as a result, okay, I basically got C's and D's in Spanish the whole time. Okay? And I still remember that. Okay? That I said to myself, this isn't important. I'll just study again next week. I missed the whole thing. So tell your mother I'm really sorry about that. Okay? What can I tell you? I feel guilty about it.
I went on to teach Spanish, too, for 15 years before I began doing all of the early literacy work. And I taught Spanish at different grade levels and different children. And I spent most of my time, though, in middle school in the first couple of levels of Spanish and spent at least 2 weeks at the beginning of every level one Spanish class just building the case for why children should take the course seriously. And,
that
you know, it
perfect.
Was really tough. Yeah, perfect, but still
it
tough.
Is.
They didn't always buy in. But, you know, I think it's a lot. You don't know how many people I hear that say that. I wish that I'd learned Spanish, or I wish they'd given me the opportunity to learn it earlier, or if I'd only taken that more seriously. So if we could spread that news at least to the students who are out there in middle and high school now and the teachers who are doing that really tough work of trying to convince them it's important, that would be amazing.
Let me help you. It is important. It is so important. It's something this country has lacked is the bilingualism that every other country has. Okay. It's just ridiculous that we don't do it. I'm curious, what got you, and obviously you carry it over into Waterford, what got you so involved in Family Voice? And, you know, some educators will say, well, we're the experts, okay? We have to determine, and nobody says it quite like this, but we're the ones that need to really have the influence to determine what's being taught in a school, okay? But you're saying, and I basically do agree with you, that the families and the community has to be well reflected, okay, within that area.
Yes.
And I'm just curious, how do you strike, as you develop things and as you look at it all, How do you strike a balance? And I'll use an extreme example. Okay, there's a lot of people in this country who are very, very conservative. Okay, that's their business, but they also have a voice. Okay, into their school boards.
Yes.
Okay, and as a result, many ultra conservative things or things that are perceived as very liberal are taken away. Ultra conservative things are put in. Again, that's a school board's voice. I'm not arguing with that. My question is, how do you balance everything between professional education and the voice of the community? And it's just happening this week. All that news came out, although it's been going on for years, where state departments of education pick books in Florida. Okay, you know, where they didn't want SEL, they didn't want equity, they didn't want critical race theory, which doesn't even exist. You know, where's the balance? How do you work that balance? Keep I'll call it community voice, family voice. How do you keep the balance with the professional education view? Jen? And that's
well,
enough. By the way, if you can answer that question, I'll give you a second doctorate. That's a
right.
Yeah.
I wish I could answer that question.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I think so much is happening right now around our country, and this mixture between community voice and political influence and, you know, school boards and students and families. I think one of the questions that as educators we need to ask ourselves is, who are the voices we're listening to, and which are the voices that are included in all of the conversations? And did we hear from the entire community? Or are we only hearing from a few of the voices that are the most powerful or the most, you know, the loudest? And I think we really need to first make sure that we are doing our due diligence to gather feedback and information from our entire community. So that's one part of it. And that's hard because we know that traditionally there are folks in our communities who have been underserved who do not always trust the educational systems or the government systems. And we, as educators, we have the due diligence to rebuild trust with all parts of the communities that we serve and to really get creative and think about ways that we can gather feedback, information, and ideas from everybody, which needs to be based on a system of mutual trust. And building mutual trust is going to take time. So that's one part of it. We have to build mutual trust with our communities, and we have to do our due diligence to ensure we're listening to everybody and that everybody has an opportunity to speak about what they feel is important for their children without the fear of retaliation from other folks. I think the second part of it is actually much bigger than the world of education right now, and it's the political divide in this nation.
And
we have to figure out how do we, and you know, from where I sit as an educator, the long game is to focus on critical thinking, creativity, communication, those skills that we can build in the new generation coming up so that I'm hopeful that they will do a better job than we have and that we will be able to somehow move past this very stigmatizing moment
get
to a place where we can talk together.
Yeah, it's just terrible. And I'm curious about something else. And I know, because I've talked to Mark and Ben and all that Waterford is very concerned about social-emotional learning, as I might add, is every school district. They're very concerned about this, and the pandemic kind of brought that to the forefront. We're trying to get it all resources out there with our SEL Today website, which you guys are involved with, all right? And, you know, it's important out there. But my curiosity is, we in education schools, we're not teaching teachers how to teach it, all right? So it becomes up to companies like Waterford to incorporate it into the curriculum because everybody says we want this and nobody taught anybody how to do it, so it becomes you guys who are – Waterford and other companies who are picking up the mantle. And can you just talk about the whole idea of social-emotional learning – what you guys do about it at Waterford and how it fits into what we're trying to do in schools all over the country. And again, I'll give you a third doctorate if you can answer that one, Jen. Doctor. Right.
So I think that at Waterford, we call them mindset skills. And over the last couple of years, we've taken a lot of time to build our own set of skills that we think are important for learners to develop. And these skills also include executive functioning, so things like being organized, being able to remember 2 to 3 steps in our mind and go do those 2 to 3 steps, hold one idea while thinking about another, looking at different perspectives. And we believe firmly that reading is obviously a superpower, but being able to be exposed to really wonderful stories that offer windows and mirrors, so places where we can see ourselves and also learn about the lives of others, and then be prompted to think about those through this lens of some other of the mindset skills, which are self-awareness, social awareness, and citizenship. So just thinking about what does it mean to be a community member? What strengths do I bring, and how do I find the strengths in others? How do I make sure that I'm respecting myself, and how do I make sure that I'm building a way of being that is respectful to others? And so I think what we see is that through our stories that we're able to offer within our content, we're able to share experiences, and then teachers and family members can be prompted to ask questions and have conversations and talk with children about all of those themes. I think also, though, as I listened to you and I hear, certainly there's conversations about SEL, there's conversations about books, and lots of conversations going on in the world of education. I think we also have to have, and I know that the Secretary of Education and others have mentioned this, the need to talk about mental health and the mental health of families and children and teachers. And we also don't teach that in school. And it's all related. It's all related. How we treat ourselves impacts how we treat others. And being able, again, to understand the need of every person and family and educator to belong to a community. I think in this country we have lost somehow this sense of belonging that other places sometimes really have developed intentionally, and having the children and families and educators feel a sense of belonging in the school that they're at,
that's
knowing
right.
that they're welcome. It's almost like we have to go back to the basics. And I know that the words sometimes get in the way of all that, but
they
no
do.
One wants to
they
go
do.
To school and not feel like they belong. No one wants to go to school and get bullied. Nobody wants to go to school and be picked on. Nobody wants to go to school and feel like they're not included, or that they're not represented, or that they can't see themselves in the curriculum. Every child wants to go to school and see and learn and have fun and find joy in learning and go home and know that they can share that with their families, and that their families also understand, wow, I understand what my child's doing all day at school. I can do more to support them here. And when I don't know what to do, I have another place to go because I belong to this community too.
Well said, and I couldn't agree with you more, okay? And I, considering what you just said, how anybody could be against that is absolutely beyond me, okay? It's just unbelievable. So just keep up the good fight, okay? There's not a family in America that doesn't believe in everything you just said. Not one single one, okay? Then we got to make sure that that holds tight across the whole board, because schools are the essence of any given community. Dr. Torres, you have done wonderfully today, okay, and that your good work is going to do beautiful right into everything that Waterford does, I got to tell you. Congratulations, Jen. It's just great. You got to feel great about
Thanks,
all this.
Thanks, Larry.
You're welcome.
I'm excited.
You're welcome here anytime, by
do.
The way. Okay, you're welcome
Oh,
here.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. I love talking to you. Say hi to everybody over there for me, and you stay safe, okay? Have a good day.
All right, Larry. Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks, Jen.
Bye.
And that, everybody, was Dr. Jenny Torres, okay? Dr. Jenny. Wow. Okay. Senior VP of Curriculum Instruction over at waterford.org. And, wow, that course you took at American is unbelievable. Okay, and I hope you listen closely to her words. We'll archive this show at ace-ed.org. Everything we do is over there. Our magazine, seltoday.org, all about teacher retention and the educator shortage. Okay, please check it all out. ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.